Good morning, everyone. Hey, all the numbers are mind-boggling this morning. $14.2 trillion, $14.3 trillion. And the devastating consequences of default, one of which is to turn gold into a sort of record investment. I said it was trading at $16.18 an ounce. I'm actually old enough to remember that gold once sold for $35 an ounce. Yeah, more like $1,618 an ounce. That's a new record. Well, the numbers may be incomprehensible, but the principles are rock solid. And behind all of the negotiations between Republicans and Democrats in Washington about what to do about the federal deficit and about the federal debt ceiling lies the U.S. Constitution. In the one case, Republicans want a constitutional amendment to sort of balance the budget by fiat in some sense. And of course, then there's the 14th Amendment. We've already discussed a couple of weeks back that in the 14th Amendment of the Constitution is a declaration that it's actually against the law to do anything that would cause a default. Well, what does that mean and how could it help us here? Lawrence Tribe, professor of constitutional law at Harvard Law School, rejoins us here on The Takeaway. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning, John.
Let's talk a little bit about the Constitution looming behind both sides in these negotiations, whether we're talking constitutional amendment or the constitutional amendment, the 14th, which actually bears directly on this subject. Can the Constitution help these guys out?
Well, I'm afraid the Constitution is not a deus ex machina here. The Constitution, as you pointed out, in a provision that many people have paid very little attention to, part of the 14th Amendment, says that the validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law shall not be questioned. And there's a little debate about what that means, but almost everyone agrees that it means that a default is unconstitutional. A default is against the law. That much is true. But two constitutional wrongs don't make a right. And what a number of people are arguing is that because a default is unconstitutional, that means that the president of the United States can simply do whatever he wants to usurp congressional powers, including the power that the Constitution explicitly gives to Congress to borrow money on the credit of the United States in order to prevent a default. That is unfortunately not true. The president doesn't have any such power any more than he has the power to raise taxes, which would be another way to prevent a default.
Now,
if the president, you know, could do what some of these people seem to think he can do, then the president could simply take over all of Congress's powers.
Now, of course, we've seen a sort of fuzziness between the separation of powers issues on national security matters during the previous administration. Is it possible that there may be some wiggle room here? After all, the reason for the 14th Amendment provision on the deficit or default of the debt had to do with the fact that lawmakers coming back into the Congress after the Civil War didn't want to pay for debts that were owed because of the Civil War and were willing to sort of push those debts to default as a way of opposing to pay them, and this was seen as a remedy.
Well, the Constitution does have a lot of somewhat fuzzy provisions, provisions about liberty, equality, due process of law, but this is among the most hardwired parts of the Constitution. The Constitution is very explicit that it is Congress that has the power of the purse. And in fact, until the Liberty Bond Act in 1917, there was no general authority on the Treasury Department's part to borrow money. Borrowing was authorized by one specific measure after another. But in 1917, Congress set the limit of total borrowing in a measure that gave the Treasury Department broad authority to borrow, and it looks quaint now to talk about what that limit was. It was about $7.5 billion. A billion, of course, is a thousandth of a trillion. That limit has been raised from time to time, but the Constitution is pretty explicit that it is Congress that has the power to borrow, Congress that has the power to tax, and Congress in Section 5 of the 14th Amendment that has the power to prevent or remedy violations of other parts of the 14th Amendment. So the people who want to kind of leapfrog the Constitution here and who seem to think that the Constitution is a solution for really every public problem are playing with fire, and they don't really have the matches to light the fire.
And your view is that this goes back to something that we've seen more and more in the United States, in that the political system, in its dysfunction, looks to the courts to solve problems that it can't come to an agreement on, and that's what we're seeing here.
I think exactly. I mean, I think it was John Marshall Harlan II who said the Constitution is not a panacea for every blot upon the public welfare. And here people are in desperation, including, I think, most recently, former President Clinton, in desperation, hoping the Constitution provides a solution. In fact, a couple of people have said it doesn't matter if this is unconstitutional. The president simply has broad powers to save the economy. But that theory that would allow the president essentially to become a dictator is one that I hope the country will reject. And I know President Obama says he'll reject it.
And that's sort of the Dick Cheney approach to the economy, as was the approach to the president as a commander-in-chief figure, in addition to being a political figure. The irreconcilability of those two roles has produced a lot of changes that we've seen in the national security realm. But let's go back to the issue of the 14th Amendment in explicit terms. I mean, who does that help? I mean, if I'm a bondholder over in China and have, like, you know, $10 billion in an account of T-bills, do I sue?
You're not likely to lend to the United States on the vague hope and prayer that the president can get away with violating the Constitution. Because the bonds that are floated without the backing of congressional authority are not likely to be very reliable.
So
the interest rates would spike and the disaster would occur.
So Moody's and S&P read the Constitution. They know what's going on here. But they
read it and they inhale it.
But if somebody I love that. If somebody is in danger of not getting paid who actually holds a bond, do they have a remedy in the U.S. court system? Can they say, hey, wait a minute, you can't do this. It's illegal.
Well, the individual bondholder would have a remedy, but no one who claims that the president has exceeded his authority by floating new bonds could show that they are hurt in a way that would allow them to go to court.
Right.
And without a court decision giving the president a clear green light, the new bonds that are issued in order to increase the debt beyond the ceiling, which is the whole point of crashing through that ceiling, would not necessarily be worth the paper they're written on.
Lawrence Tribe, professor of constitutional law at Harvard Law School, telling the people in Washington the Constitution will not save you. Raise the debt ceiling. Deal with it. Lawrence Tribe, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.